I'm Kevin Davis, and this is the Catholic Family Podcast, and I'm really happy to be joined by a friend of the show now, Intro Ebo. You can check out his blog over at Intro Ebo, Ad Altare Dei. I always forget the exact address here. Intro Ebo Ad Altare Dei 2.blogspot.com. He publishes material every Monday. It's always fantastic. It deals with the faith, it deals with culture, and it sometimes deals with the occult. Now, we talked a couple weeks ago now about occultism in the Waldorf schools and its crazy connection with the quote-unquote popes of Vatican II. Absolutely fascinating show, and it opened my eyes even more than they already were to what on earth is going on behind the scenes and how occultism has taken such a hold on society. And I reached out again to Intribo and said, hey, I would love to do a series about this, and thank goodness he agreed to do it. So we're going to try to do a series about occultism and occultism in society. Now, I want to say straight up, this is not a show that kids should be watching, listening to. This is going to be adult themed. There's going to be some heavy, dark stuff, I assume. Look at the material, look at the matter we're talking about. So beware, be careful where you listen to this. This is not something, again, that's for the lighthearted, but it is very important to understand what is going on behind the scenes, how this has such a grasp on Hollywood, on the music industry, and on society as a whole. So, Intribo, I apologize for the long introduction. Thank you again so much for coming on, and let's begin.
Thank you, Kevin. And I really appreciate the fact that you're doing this, because one of the themes in my blog for the last few years has been what I've termed the occult invasion or occult explosion or the occult revival. And it is all of those things. If you think about it, that it has exploded. When you have an explosion, you know, shrapnel goes all over. Well, it's all over. When you have an invasion, it has permeated itself into every fiber of our society. And it is revived in the sense that there's more occult activity going on now, I believe, than back at the time of the ancient Israelites when they had all the pagans surrounding them. Now, you know, when people hear me talk about this, a lot of them think I flipped out, because knowing my background as a science teacher and a lawyer, they're like, well, you believe in all this stuff? I mean, come on, you look like a pretty rational guy. To be honest, before I started my blog in 2010, I was also of the opinion that, all right, I knew there was a cult, I knew it was forbidden by the church, I knew it was evil, etc. But I never fully understood, how it was enmeshed in everything we do until I started researching. For example, I had no idea. Now, I was a teacher. I had no idea the Waldorf schools were full of occultism, and they were teaching children to be clairvoyants. I mean, that really flipped me out. So this series, I'm going to lay out to show that there is substantial evidence for what I'm saying. It is not someone who, I've had commenters and people come on and say, well, you know, you're one of those guys that if anything isn't explicitly Christian, it's evil, and you see evil everywhere. And no, I don't. I'm seeing evil where it really is and for what it is. Whether you choose to see it as that or not is up to you, but I'm just laying out the facts. All right. I understand the scientific method. I understand, you know, what it is to be rational. I also understand that these are facts. As an attorney, I understand what facts are. I have to present facts to the court. It's not my opinion. And what I'm about to present here, I'm laying out the facts. I always do that in my blog. I'm sure to do my research and to lay out what is factual. And if something is my opinion, I state it. You know, this is my opinion as a layman. Take it or leave it. But I always base even that opinion on certain facts. So what I plan to do today, and I'm going to start right now, is to first define what we're talking about when we talk about the occult. And I'm glad you said to your listeners, this is really not meant for children. I wouldn't have them listening. Anyone under the age of 21, I wouldn't have them listening to this. It's a serious matter, and it deals with serious things. So please be advised of that again. Now, the dictionary defines the occult as, quote, supernatural, mystical, or magical belief practices or phenomena. Now, the word occult itself comes from the Latin occultus, which means concealed or hidden. For example, we talk about in theology occult heretics. Those are heretics that are only known to themselves and to God. They believe in a heresy, but they don't let anyone know this. So that is an occult heretic. In medicine, there is occult blood found in your stool or in your urine. That means it is hidden, that it can't be seen with the naked human eye, that you need to go, and it was only found because it was passed through medical screening that it was able to be picked up. So we're talking about things that are hidden. And the occult involves mystic knowledge and magic powers, quote unquote, received from the spirit world and dispensed for the benefit of the devotees, or directed destructively at enemies by those who have been initiated into its secrets. Now, the masters of occult powers are known in various cultures as medicine men or women, witch doctors, witches. By the way, a male witch is not called a warlock. In Wicca, male and female are witches. Psychics, pagan priests, sorcerers, astrologers, gurus, yogis, shamans, mediums, seers, and healers. All of these fall under the guise of the occult. Now, some of those involved with the occult powers attribute what happens to a variety of deities, pagan deities, others to an impersonal force inherent within the universe that has a dark and a light side to it, and humans can tap into this. And still others claim they're simply using a normal power of the mind, which can be cultivated into a special state of consciousness. Now, there are those who blasphemously attribute occult powers to the true God of Catholicism. And they say, you know, I'm getting this. And there are actually people who work with mediums, Vatican II sect priests, and they pray the rosary before they go out and participate in, you know, seances. Oh, sorry, that doesn't jibe. So occult powers that produce results which cannot be explained by science are found in the practice of almost every religion. Go back and you'll see from those sects that call themselves Christian, you have them writhing on the floor in holy laughter and stuff like that. To paganism, of course, the pagan gods of Hinduism, idolatry, witchcraft, and Satanism, which is something that is real. You know, people talk about the satanic panic back in the 1980s, and I'm reminded of Joe McCarthy, who to me is an American hero. The only thing that he did wrong was overestimate the number of communists by about 10%. Same thing here, you know, Satanism is very real, and not all satanic ritual abuse is accurate, but much of it is. So what are the three common elements of the occult? Now, as I'm going to be talking, as we're going into the series later on, you're going to see three common elements that are throughout all occult activity, three common elements, and you can look for them now. Once you're aware of something, you can look for it. The first is moral and cognitive relativism. Moral relativism means that there is no absolute standard of good and bad. There is no absolute standards of good and bad. What's, you know, it all depends on the circumstance, the time, and whatever is the end justifies the means is one type of moral relativism. So you can't say with any certainty that certain actions are good or bad. Everything depends upon the person, the circumstances, etc. Cognitive relativism is the oldest, this is my truth. You hear a lot of millennials talking about it. This is my truth, as if truth is something that belongs to you. You have your truth, I have my truth, and we're living in separate worlds, basically. And this is a kind of cognitive dissonance where you're like separating, well, you know, don't we share a common world? But, you know, I had somebody in my law firm say that to me, you know, oh, you know, that's, I'm glad you spoke your truth. I said, my truth? I said, no, I spoke the truth, not my truth. I don't own it, and it's not different from yours. So that's the first element, is that moral and cognitive relativism. The second is the idea that you are God, or God is within you. And this is going to be, you know, remember the serpent, the devil in Adam and Eve. What did he say? Do this and you will be like God. So yeah, that's what he said. You will be like God. And that is what is in the occult. Now, the occult buys into two philosophies, pantheism and panentheism. Right? Now, the word pantheism is derived from two Greek words, pan, which means all, and theos, God. And all is God, and God is all. So everything is part of God. Not only is the life force pervasive throughout the world, but all the world is divine. And divinity is seen as inseparable from and immanent in nature and in humanity. So all of us are part of God, or potentially so, and we can tap into this God-like power. So that's pantheism, and Hinduism and Buddhism are firmly grounded in pantheism, and they are pagan religions. Most pagan religions go to pantheism, most, not all, most. And panentheism, which is a little bit, that's spelled P-A-N-E-N-T-H-E-I-S-M, panentheism, all right, is derived from three Greek words, pan, which means all, and in, and theos, God, hence all in God. So panentheists postulate that God is in the world similar to the way your soul is in your body. And the soul is in a body, yet it still transcends it. So the divinity is in or manifested in the world, but transcends it. So all that exists is imbued with divinity, yet the divinity transcends creation. So in short, panentheists view nature and all that exists as in the divine, but not comprising the totality of the divine. So we're all little God sparks, if you will. So that's the second thing. The second thing is that you are God. And if you notice, I know, Kevin, that you studied Mormonism. Well, you know that Mormonism, that Joseph Smith was a Freemason, and that Mormonism teaches that you can become a God and you'll rule over your own world, that we all have the potential to become gods. Well, Freemasonry is a cult. And you see that that's, again, this is one of its themes, that you can become a god in Mormonism. And that's why they do that.
So, and it's pretty crazy how it seems like Freemasonry always comes up in this stuff, doesn't it? It's one of those things, again, that's like, you know, if you're talking about conspiracies or going into anything occult or anything, it always comes up. And it's just, I don't know what the word is. I don't know if it's ironic, but it is it's a connection that's easily made and often made. And that's, I guess that's another thing to keep your eye on, an eye on those Freemasons.
Absolutely. And that's, again, that's another example of how, you know, you are God and, you know, it's all within you. And the answer to a lot of self-help today, oh, you know, you go out there, it's in, the answer is in you. You know, you are the ultimate arbiter of what happens to you. You can make yourself rich. You can do this. You can do everything. And then the third occult element, the third one, is the denigration of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and his one true church by making them look irrelevant, inferior, or even evil, while exalting what is really evil and making it look good. Woe to them that call good evil and evil good, if you remember, all right? So those are the three common elements. And now when you hear about the occult, see if you can pick out one of those. I guarantee you it comes up. Now, common occult practices can really be boiled down to three. Divination, also known as fortune telling. Divination is any attempt to gain knowledge of the future or any information by reading hidden meanings into nature and patterns. So astrology, numerology. Or they can use supernatural means, like so-called psychic powers. Divination also includes things like tarot cards, horoscopes, palm readings, psychic readings. A lot of them are charlatans, but as we'll see in a moment, that doesn't really matter. For example, I was driving to work about a couple of years ago, true story, and a number comes up on my Bluetooth that I don't recognize. So I click on, and I say, a female voice comes on and says, hello. I say, hello. And she goes, who is this? I said, you're calling me. Who are you? She goes, I want to know if you called me. I said, well, who are you? She says, I'm Christina the Psychic. I said, wouldn't you already know? And she called me a nasty name and hung up.
Well played.
So divination contrasts the sanctioned means of God's revelation through his church, and even in private revelations, such as those approved by the church, Fatima and things like that. And divination is absolutely prohibited by God. Spiritism is the second common practice, known as spirit contact. It refers to seeking information or guidance from disembodied beings who are believed to be dead people. And I'm not talking here about saints, but, you know, someone's relative dies, we pray for them. We don't pray to them. Difference. Okay. Aliens, alleged. ascended masters, as they are called, angels, and not the angels of Saint Michael, Saint Gabriel, and Saint Raphael, and deities from non-Christian religions. And Ouija boards are used to channel spirits and are tools of spiritism. It can include prayers to the disembodied people that you know, false gods and other spirit beings, and it counterfeits Christian prayer. And finally, magic, spelled with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K. Magic spelled with just a C at the end. That usually refers to sleight of hand magic tricks, like, you know, pick a card, any card, pull a rabbit out of the hat. That's all innocent. This type of magic with the K at the end is also known as sorcery. And it is the science or art of causing change and conformity with the will using means not currently understood by traditional Western science. It doesn't include acts of God, but the human will is thought to be the substantial force that can be harnessed and used to generate outcomes directly and without natural means, or in ceremonial magic, like using spells, rituals, tools, or the aid of so-called spirit guides. Magic is a counterfeit of spiritual gifts that people do have, like the apostles had, and it inverts God's will, substituting human will instead. And instead of the divine sovereignty, we appeal to mythical, magical world forces instead of God's power. So those are the three things that you'll see. Those are the three practices of the occult.
This is going a little off topic, so maybe answer quickly. But if you know, is yoga involved in any of these? I know it's another topic, but I've heard that yoga is a practice of, in a way, almost worshiping false deities of, I think, what is it, Hindu deities?
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And yoga is pushed by the Vatican II sect. They actually have, I've seen Vatican II sect parishes advertising for yoga nights.
Wow.
Yep. And I've done a couple of posts on that, about the connection with yoga. Absolutely. And it's not some innocent form of exercise, as people think. And it is, you cannot separate the paganism inherent in it from the exercise. If you have one, you have the other. It's not something that you can, like I said, just do it for the exercise or do it for the meditation. And the meditation, there's pagan meditation, not Christian meditation. And there is a difference, a big difference. We could talk about that in another show. We could do a whole show on yoga.
For sure.
What church teaching is on the occult is as follows. All forms of occult activity are condemned by both the Bible and church teaching. From Deuteronomy chapter 18, 10 to 12 reads, and I quote, "Let no one be found among you who sacrifices their son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft, or casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist, or who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. Because of these same detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out those nations before you," unquote.
Hey, can you find something that's a little more clear, maybe? Wow.
Yeah, I know. I hate it when it's ambiguous.
Wow.
Now, according to theologian Yonah, that's the correct pronunciation of his name, Yonah, not Joan, J-O-N-E, is Yonah. According to Yonah, he says, and I quote, "Spiritism claims to be able to communicate with the spirit world and endeavors to establish such commerce with it. Although spiritism is for the most part fraud, still the intention alone to enter into communication with spirits is gravely sinful. Therefore, it is a mortal sin to conduct a spiritistic seance or to act as a medium." And that's from his Moral Theology tome of 1961 on page 100. So there we see that. And it's not just Yonah either. If you look up Prumer, McHugh and Callan, go to any moral theologian, St. Alphonsus Liguori, they will tell you anyone attempting to contact the dead is committing mortal sin. This is not light matter. It does not admit of light matter. Even if it is phony, like Christina the psychic who called me up, even she, by the very attempt to do something like this, is committing mortal sin. So this does not admit of light matter. God so detests these things that he drove out and destroyed the Canaanites because of it. He destroyed them. And anyone else who reversed these practices, whether ancient Israel or you, Kevin, or me, risks the same fate. Occultism is a sin even when we can't see the negative side of that. And even if it happens to work, if somebody can, and sometimes they do work, and there are clear-cut cases of it working, But that just is even worse because that whoever's working it isn't God. So that leaves us one choice.
And that would be kind of my question. Because I mean, I guess, you know, some of your famous ones are, you know, say Rasputin. I mean, I don't know what's actually true about Rasputin, but he seems one that at least the tales that are told of him was some sort of witch or something. And it seems like some of his machinations were working. And I mean, I guess, as you say, it can't come from God. So I guess, is this something that the devil has some sort of power if given the right recipes, I suppose, to work this way?
Well, Christ said that Satan is the prince of this world. And, you know, it's when people, I go back to, you know, a lot of people know vampire lore. You know, the old lore is that a vampire can't come in unless you invite it.
Right.
Invite it in your home. Otherwise, it has to stay outside. Well, if you open a door to hell and invite evil, they will take you up on the offer. Trust me. Whether it's done innocently or whether it's, especially if it's done on purpose, you call evil into your life, it doesn't hesitate to enter. So you're the one that's giving it the green light by these practices. And everyone who's done that will live to regret it, if not on this life, which I think they will, but definitely in the next. It's not, hell is not as it's made to be seen in popular culture. You know, I'd rather cry with the sinners than laugh with the saints. So that's what you think now. You'll find out it's very different later. So Christ is more important than anything that occultism could ever hope to offer us. Now, the question is always asked to me, well, how come occultism is so popular? You know, why are you talking about this explosion, this invasion, this revival? And the occult explosion is due to several factors. And number one on the list is, guess what? Vatican II sect. Because when the missionaries used to, and Father DePauw spoke to me about this too, he said, when the missionaries went out, the number one, proportionately, Belgium sent out more missionaries to the world than any other country, including Italy and Ireland. Now it's the pig, and you know, I'm glad, well, I don't want to say about, you know, if that grinding noise you hear, his father's remains turning over in his grave, said his old Belgium being just another pagan country, you know, once the greatest Catholic country on earth and now reduced to nothing. But he said that when the Belgian brothers and the Belgian priests went out to these pagan lands, for example, his sister, Mother Marie, when she went to the Belgian Congo, there were many stories of possessed people and demonic activity. But as the nuns and the priests and the holy sacrifice of the mass and the sacraments and the true doctrine was spread, occult activity went down precipitously. It went down because as Christ grows, Satan shrinks. Well, the reverse is also true. As the holy sacrifice of the mass has been taken away and replaced with a, you know, more or less neo-Masonic, neo-Protestant bread and wine service skipping around a table, that doesn't produce grace. That doesn't do, the devil doesn't shrink from that. And so as Christ, it doesn't give you the real presence either. So as Christ shrinks, Satan increases. So that's the greatest reason for the occult explosion. Satan's out to get as many souls as he can. And he knows his opportunity is now. So he's out there to trick people every which way they can.
Well, I'm sorry, real quick. I didn't live through the time, but if you look at the history of the 1960s through 80s or 90s, even especially, I mean, you just look at the you know, the mass murderers, you know, the just absolute real insanity, in the world. And you look at Vietnam and the kind of revolutions and rebellions and just pure chaos. It was really chaotic, at least looking back on it. And it, you just can't tell me that was a coincidence. I mean that didn't just all start off like Vatican II happened and you opened up a portal to hell almost. I mean, that's at least how I can see it looking back on it now. And as you say, it's all connected. I mean, when you shut down that avenue of grace and you know, pretty much turn over St. Peter's to the devil, what do you expect to happen, I suppose? And you and I both talk about that too, you know, that we are in an actual fight against good, you know, with good and evil fighting against each other. And it's real. It's not just kind of this imaginary thing. It all kind of comes together.
It absolutely does. I mean, Vatican II is, I think that our whole world, I know, as I'm going to say, I know insofar as from spiritual and theology, that our world would be in a much, much better place today had Vatican II never happened. I mean, it's just the evils that it has perpetuated and that it has brought upon, I mean, to the point where they're even hosting occultism. You know, I just spoke about before, we were talking about the yoga classes. And that's just one aspect, one small aspect. No one warns people about this. Everybody goes to heaven, nice, nice, sweet, sweet. And you know, no one's being warned. No one's being warned. And it is the number one reason that occultism has taken off. And also occultism is easy to sell when people haven't been raised to fear it. You know, they're not raised nowadays to say, hey, you know, stay away from this stuff. This stuff is bad. Parents today are either willfully blind or maybe innocently so to this stuff. They're not raised to say that, you know, this stuff was scary to me as a kid. But now it's like, no big deal. You know, kids talk about witches and things, and then, you know, I wince when I see Halloween coming up and the kids go around dressed as mass murderers.
100%.
I mean, you're letting a child go out as, you know, Jack the Ripper. That was actual costume, Jack the Ripper. I mean, Jack the Ripper was a mass murderer. So, I mean, this is what we've come to.
Well, and as you say, when you normalize it, and we talked about before the show, and I remember the band's name now is Maroon 5, and they had a song 10 years ago, 15 years ago called Animals. And this was, I think it was the number one song in the world for a long time. And I listened to it on you know, on the radio, and it never really struck me. I was like, okay, I didn't really like it, but it was like, okay, whatever, it's a song. And I eventually came across the video of it, and it's satanic. It is pure from the devil. I don't go watch it, anybody. I seriously mean that. Don't watch it. It's that bad. It is like from hell, and they obviously meant that. And you can't tell me that watching that has no effect on you. It has to. And I guarantee you that video has millions and millions of views. You mean to tell me that these kids and these people watching videos like this aren't in some way spiritually affected? They're not somehow inviting the vampires, inviting the devils into their homes? It's terrifying.
That's right. You have to be very careful what you let into your homes these days, more so than ever before. Again, it's the occult explosion, the invasion. It's ubiquitous. And, you know, how many people do you hear today saying, well, I'm spiritual, not religious. I'm going to say I'm spiritual. So whatever that means, I don't know what it means. I don't think they know what it means. But they all claim, you know, well, I'm in contact with some sort of something. Well, yeah, you're in contact with something, but you don't want to be in contact with it if you knew what it was. So that's one of the powers of the occult, is that, or the draw of the occult, I should say, that it promises knowledge, so it makes you feel special, and power that you can do anything because you're divine within. And no morals to hold you back because everything's relative. And who doesn't want to have more knowledge, more power, and be your own boss? Occultism promises all of that packaged in some trendy countercultural motif. So people can impress their friends with their clarity and their confidence. Look, I'm in charge of my life and I can do all these things. Fortune-telling puzzles can be amusing to people. Magic feels empowering. Spiritism feels communal. You know, you're in a seance together, calling these spirits. And if you add in the exacerbating factors today, like depression, there's more depression in the world than ever before, anxiety disorder, family struggles, addictions, alcohol and drugs. It's easy to see how occult fascination might turn people away from Catholic answers to shortcut solutions promised in the dark arts. I mean, occultists are deceived, but they still have the same basic human needs as everybody else does, as you and I and everyone else. They're veered down a forbidden alley in search of the things we all seek. Everyone likes empowerment, belonging, meaning, purpose. So yeah, that's the draw. And, you know, don't expect these occultists to look like I used to think at one time myself. You know, these are Satanists around in black capes and they have, you know, the pentagram, you know, etched on their chest or something like that. It's not like that. You're going to see a cult teaching master in religious tolerance. Actually, not so much even religious tolerance, or as they say, you know, it's religious liberty. Religious liberty. Where do we get that from? Gee, framing its message as an open-minded, compassionate enlightenment. And the appeal can be obvious. I've seen atheists and agnostics in the occult, And when I asked them about that, I said, how can you do this if you're saying that Christianity is garbage and there is no God? And what are you doing this for? You know, what are you going to tarot readings? And you know what the answer is? The answer is this. They dismiss the evils of occultism because the first thing they'll do is they'll tell you that, you know, Christianity is a fraud, there is no God. And the next breath, they tell you that this occult pseudoscience, like there's energy, crystal energy, and energy in the cards, and this holistic medicine stuff. And they talk about aliens from other planets and things like that. And they say, and this is what I was told, that the tarot card magic is science we don't understand yet. So it basically becomes science of the gaps. You know, they accuse Christians of God of the gaps when we don't understand. So, well, that must be God. Well, that must be science. And they wind up going to like tarot card readings, yet they affirm atheism. So it's mind-boggling. So you even have atheists and agnostics involved in the occult, where you'd least expect them to be. Astronomers, I did my post this, which is actually, this is going to end, you know, tomorrow with my new post. You know, the astronomers who see UFOs, the ones that see them have much less time stargazing than the ones that don't. But you know what they all had in common is that they were all involved in astrology.
Interesting.
Occult practices, and they should know better. These are trained scientists, doctorates in astronomy. So the growing occult fascination has less to do with science and more to do with the Christian or Catholic Christian decline. That's really where it's at. And again, the people wanting to become empowered and not knowing where to turn. You're also going to see in the occults certain, I don't want to call them doctrines, but certain mindsets that are going to be among those who practice the occult. For example, feminism is a big theme. Feminism is a big theme. You know, in Wicca, why do so many women? Because women are equal to or superior to men in Wicca. Okay. And in satanic covens, women are considered equal to men. And many, so these things, women, so this empowerment of women, this false empowerment of women, this feminism, individualism, that you don't have to listen to anybody. You can be your own boss. Self-deification, humans are the most important. Everything is centered around man, centered around people. You are divine. And that goes in with the pantheism and the panentheism. Mysticism, that spiritual knowledge comes by subjective experience. That's one of the tenets of modernism. It is subjective. It's not objective. It's subjective. The most knowledge you will get will come to you as an individual. Personalizing God. They say that God is an it. It's an energy. It's a force. It's never a he. A vague pseudoscientific view of energy. They talk about chakras and lunar energy and the force of the universe. Of course, being spiritual but not religious, as I said before, no one knows what that means, including them. And there's something I term magical thinking with the K, belief that everything is related by some principle or force or element that can be manipulated by the human will. So occultism is a powerful tool of deception, partly because it's so widespread. Anyone in the habit of absorbing culture will absorb the occult influence, like you said with Maroon 5 and Adam Levine, the lead singer. He's a real not good person. All right, they absorb this stuff, and the cultural landscape is flooded with occult-friendly beliefs such as self-deification, depersonalizing God, magical thinking. And sometimes occult themes are obvious, but it's also less so because it's paraded around as entertainment, and it's done so because Satan will appear as an angel of light, if possible, to deceive people. We know that from Scripture. So occult fascination distracts us and turns our attention away from God. It nurtures a self-centered attitude instead of God-centered worship. Instead of seeking God's will and submitting our lives and ambitions to him, it's the Wiccan reedy. It's called the reed or the reedy. Some call it the reedy, but I think reed is the more accepted pronunciation. Do what thou wilt. And it also goes along with Aleister Crowley, who was one of the great Satanists, said, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. All right. So let selfish pleasure and personal empowerment guide you. Occultism isn't always, like I said, it's not always clear cut, like seeing, you know, people with devil horns and satanic covens. It's not going to signal its arrival when it enters your room. Satan masquerades as an angel of light, so we can expect occult influences to hide behind good intentions, ignorance, and pretty packaging, like movies, music, TV, medicine, exercise, business. It comes in all of them. Education, it's there. It is there. Now, I'm going to give some, for this first episode, I'm going to give some examples in books and movies. And again, this is by no means comprehensive. I just picked some ones that I thought would be interesting to talk about on the first episode. And it's important to understand that demonic forces are behind these seemingly innocent works, such as Harry Potter, okay? And there was the Twilight series, which was very big, especially among teenage girls, where this vampire, 108-year-old vampire, Edward, falls in love with this girl, Bella, and their forbidden romance and such, and he's a good vampire. Well, let's see now, as we go into this, remember what I had said about the occult themes and the occult doctrines, and see how many you can pick out with my not having to say anything. You can see them now for yourself. So I alert parents, again, listening to this. You must alert your children and grandchildren to stay away. These are dangerous. Right? The Twilight series is around the romance between, as I said, Edward, who's a 108-year-old vampire, and Bella, a teenage girl. Now, Edward doesn't age, so he appears young, but there remains the underlying pedophile problem.
Creepy.
It's never addressed. Right? Edward's 108-year-old man, and there's a 16-year-old girl. Now, in any other context, even if you said like an 80-year-old man at 60, you'd be like, ew, right? But you don't have the ew factor in this. So it makes it seem acceptable. Now, Edward belongs to a good coven of vampires who don't kill humans and drink animal blood instead. And he protects Bella from the bad vampires, even as he fights against his own perverse urges to kill her and drink her blood. So Edward is portrayed as a noble vampire, and the series is seeped in occult themes. And in a like manner, Harry Potter tells us there are good witches and bad witches, when all forms of Wicca and all forms of the occult are condemned by God. So here they're portraying evil as good. Now, you can't have a good witch any more than you can have a good abortionist. Well, you know, you're the wicked abortionist and you're the good abortionist. Well, wait a second. You're both murdering babies. You're both wicked. There is no good abortionist. So there's certain things that cannot be good. And the occult is one of them. Occult practices are not good. They are inherently evil. They're calling upon Satan. They're calling upon the forces of hell. So portraying evil as good or portraying or having good potential has never been so rampant as today. You will not see any condemnations from the Vatican II sect, as this is what they believe. Elements of truth and goodness can be found in everything. So why can't we have a good vampire or a good witch? Because there's good in everything. Starhawk, who was a witch, was invited into one of the archdioceses here in the United States of America to help, quote-unquote, concelebrate a Novus Bogus Mass. And I put Mass also in quotation marks. All right.
I'm sorry, but I know JP2 and Francis, at least, and I think Benedict too, all had medicine men and medicine women come and perform some sort of, I don't know, ceremony, smoke blowing in their faces. I mean, again, they're witches who you know, offer things to fake gods, which we know by Catholic teaching, they are devils. That is absolutely clear. And yet these quote unquote popes have them invite them and have them blow smoke in their faces. That's not kidding, guys. You can go look up the videos. So anyone watching this, remember which side you're on over here.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, Harry Potter also promotes moral relativism. Nothing is right or wrong. It depends on the circumstances. When Harry Potter steals or Harry Potter tells a lie, it's okay because the end justifies the means.
Totally.
And even more frightening is, here's the little known fact. Stephanie Meyer, who wrote the Twilight series, and Jake, who, by the way, was a Mormon. She was a Mormon. Is a Mormon. And J.K. Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter series, both have claimed they've gotten their ideas from an outside source that revealed it to them by speaking to them.
Ooh,
and I kid you not. For Rowling, it was during a train ride in 1990, and she claimed, and I quote, "I just was staring out the window, and the idea of Harry Potter just came to me. He appeared in my mind's eye fully formed." And that was from Reuters. And she claims to hear in her head the conversations that she writes. "The dialogue comes to me as if I'm overhearing a conversation." It hears in my ears. It rings in my ears. Okay. The movie was insidious insofar as, it began. To go back just for a second, the idea of witches being good and evil comes to us from 1939, pre-Vatican two times. This one slipped under the radar for the most part. The Wizard of Oz. How many people know that The Wizard of Oz is based on a book of the same name written by Frank Baum, B-A-U-M, who was an admitted occultist and who claimed that he channeled the idea from an otherworldly source. He was a channel. He was a spiritual. And if here's what he laid out. The protagonist, Dorothy, and her friends are following the yellow brick road. Well, in heaven, there are streets of gold, it tells us in Apocalypse 21. And they go to see the all-knowing, all-powerful Wizard of Oz. But only God is omniscient and omnipotent. And what does it turn out to be? The wizard is a fake, a phony, a fraud.
True.
And so Wiccans denigrate and deny the Christian God as being a fake, a phony, and a fraud. And lastly, what does the so-called good witch, Glinda, say? That they have the power to obtain all they want, the courage, the intelligence, a heart, going back home, because it lies within you, Dorothy. Tap your heels together three times, there's no place like home, because it's within her. Only she could get herself home. And that comes from the idea that all she needs is herself, because she is a spark of the divine. And that's where it first started. And so this was, you have now J.K. Rowling also saying that she's hearing voices. She says it. And the voices, and it came to her inner mind's eye fully formed. Stephanie Meyer, a member of the Mormon sect. Now, here's what she said, quote, "I woke up on that June 2nd from a very vivid dream. In my dream, two people were having an intense conversation in a meadow in the woods. One of these people was just your average girl. The other person was a fantastically beautiful, sparkly vampire. And they were discussing the difficulties inherent in the facts that A, they were falling in love with each other, while B, the vampire was particularly attracted to the scent of her blood, was having a difficult time for restraining himself from killing her immediately." So this is what, that was her dream. So it came to her in a dream.
Yikes.
Now she relates that after her dream, she began to hear voices in the house that wouldn't stop until she wrote down what she was hearing. Again, quoting from Meyer herself, "All this time, Bella and Edward were, quite literally, voices in my head. They simply wouldn't shut up. I couldn't turn them off. I'd stay up as late as I could trying to get all the stuff on my mind typed out and then crawl exhausted into bed. My baby wasn't sleeping through the night yet, only to have another conversation start in my head. I hated to lose anything by forgetting, so I'd get up and head down to the computer. Eventually, I got a pen and notebook from beside my bed to jot notes down so I could get some freaking sleep. It was always an exciting challenge in the morning to try to decipher the stuff I'd scrawled across the page in the dark." And that's from Stephanie Meyer. So after she wrote her books, Myers then relates that Edward, quote unquote, came to her in a dream and let her know that he wasn't good. Now, she told Entertainment Weekly, a magazine here in the United States, "Edward told me I had gotten it wrong, that he did drink blood like every other vampire, and you couldn't live on animals the way I had written it. We had this conversation and I was terrified." Now, listen, could both women have active imaginations? When you consider that both claim the characters came to them out of the blue, both claim they could literally hear what they had to write from an external source, and all dealt with something showing evil as good, I think you can make a good case that it was demonically inspired.
Well, and for some, as someone who's tried to start to write a book, I can tell you, I have had no outside help in terms of hearing any inspiration. I shouldn't say after hearing that, I shouldn't say I wish that I did, but I wish I had a little more inner inspiration as well. But that's creepy. And that is, wow, that's, and I mean, I've known, and unfortunately, I've seen some of each movies. I mean, back in the day before I was a little smarter and wiser and older. But boy, as you say, I mean, some of it is really out in the open. And some of the stuff, as you say, they just admit it. That's not hidden. You know, the videos you see online from Maroon 5, it's out in the open. It is satanic. And I think they just see that the society is so, yeah, I don't know, lazy. Nope. They don't care. Yeah, numb. Exactly. That's a perfect word. Numb. They just, okay. Okay. Then it's satanic. All right. Fine.
No big deal.
Crazy.
The other one I wanted to talk about was a man that Father DePauw had spoken to me and said is one of the most evil men in the world. And that was Steven Allen Spielberg. Spielberg, born in 1946, was an Orthodox Jew, which he renounced. And has been one of the most successful movie makers in history, along with his good friend George Lucas. His first blockbuster was Jaws in 1976. I was 11 years old at the time. And I remember that the scenes in the film terrorized thousands of people. And I remember the headlines saying that, you know, how many people weren't going into the water anymore. So incontrovertible proof that movies do shape the lives and affect life decisions. I mean, how many people have thought about maybe going into the water and had a Jaws-like shark attack and thinking, oh, well, maybe I better not go in, you know, that type of thing. So it, you know, think of how many, before I go into these couple of movies, think about it. How many slogans from movies have found their way into our very language? And we talk about somebody being red-pilled. Well, that's the Matrix. Right. You talk about you can't handle the truth. Well, we're talking about A Few Good Men. You know, all these things come in, you know, show me the money. You know, all these things come to us from the movies. So don't tell me they don't influence people when they do.
100%.
It's influenced our culture. Everybody knows what you're talking about when you say these things. So Spielberg no longer, I said, practices Judaism, but he contends himself in promoting the occult themes woven into his movies. He has actually admitted that he puts his fears into the movies because he's angry at the world and he wants the world to suffer as he did. He has said that. Now, before one of his, I'm going to center on two of his movies. E.T. came out in 1982. And aliens were always depicted as ugly and scary. Now, Spielberg's creature is shown as having three fingers and three toes, which is a common way that demons are shown in Africa. Did you know that?
I didn't. They
manifest to witch doctors. And that's how the witch doctors have, they look like E.T. That's where he got it from. And E.T. is found to be lovable, and he actually apes Christ. Now, the alien is a false messiah who promises to return, not for judgment of good and evil, but to save by controlling all humans. In the movie, his young friend Elliot becomes connected to E.T., who then controls him, and Elliot speaks of himself as we. Now, that should be something scary, but it's seen as something good. You have an alien controlling your body. And even the movie poster is a blasphemous and twisted representation of Michelangelo's creation of Adam, you know, with the finger of God and the finger of Adam. It was this ugly alien finger coming to touch a kid's finger, showing that a new race is to be subjected to the extraterrestrials. Right, now, consider, here's some things to consider about E.T. Came out of the world, has to leave, and promises to come back. Pointed to his friend Elliot and promises to live inside him always. Could heal people. Dies from the pollution on the earth and resurrects himself by his own power. And ascends up into the clouds into a spaceship with his followers looking up after him. Sound familiar?
Wow.
Yeah. Now, why would demons pretend to be otherworldly creatures? And I said this in my post of this week, and I'm going to respond with that question with another question, which I rarely do, but think of it. Why would demons pretend to be souls of deceased people during seances while speaking through mediums? Because all the mediums will tell the grieving person that who has lost someone that their deceased are fine and happy. They never tell them that they're in hell, ever. Now, of course, this is what everyone wants to hear about their loved ones, right? We all want to hear that. But how is it possible that all these people died within the true church in the state of sanctifying grace? Hell and damnation are never even considered as possibilities.
Sure.
And in the case of impersonating the souls of the dead, demons prey on the fear of death and the unknown. People want to hear you'll be happy when you die, no matter how you live. Don't worry about it. Just do it. And they want to hear that their father, grandmother, aunt, best friend, etc. are in heaven no matter what they believed and no matter what they did. And in the case of aliens, demons prey on the opposite, not on humanity's fears, but on humanity's hopes. Now, humans have always been fascinated by space. Astrology has always been the most popular science in the United States. And space exploration, astronomy has always been the most popular science. And one of the most popular forms of the occult is astrology. So they're fascinated with space. People are generally, and I've noticed that when I used to teach too in middle school science, they always want to learn about space. And millions of people want to end disease, hunger, war, poverty, and what better way to appeal to them than to pervert these hopes and tell them you can have paradise in this life apart from God when the aliens come and make everything perfect.
Right.
So sure. That is, you know, and again, I don't believe that there are, it's very rare. It's a very, very small chance. And Powell, my friend from Poland, commenter, he said that he found some theologians. They said the odds of there being extraterrestrial life can't be ruled out absolutely, but it's extremely low. And I believe that these UFOs are of demonic origin. But when you're seeing ET and you see how cute, well, are you going to be afraid of them or are you going to be welcoming? All right. There's method behind the madness of Spielberg.
Okay.
Here's a quote from Steven Spielberg. It is a very, very personal thing that I won't discuss. And he's talking now about ET. I've always wanted to see, and he's also Close Encounters. I've always wanted to see a UFO, but unfortunately I never have. But ghosts, that's another story. He's claimed to have been in contact with ghosts. Now, Spielberg's box office hit Poltergeist is about a family who comes in contact with a spirit that wreaks havoc upon them and is ultimately exorcised, not by a priest, not by anyone who believes in Christianity, but by a psychic medium. Guess what? The hero is an occultist. And Spielberg sums up the spiritual intent of the film with the following statement, and I quote, "The film has some incredibly spiritual things in it. We show the spectral light that comes to Earth, piercing a hole in time and space into the home of a suburban family. In our film, they are spirits or ghosts who don't know they are dead and who need a guide to take them into the next plane of existence through a gateway of spectral light," unquote. As if this was some sort of theology. This is nonsense. This is gobbledygook. This is occult nonsense. And again, Spielberg, "I had no way to sublimate or channel the fears I had until I began telling stories to my younger sisters. This removed the fear from my soul and transferred it into theirs. This is what I want. I want people to love my movies, and I'll be a whore to get them in the theaters," unquote. Go look that. Yes. It was in 1985. That is a direct quote. I'll be a whore to get people into the movies.
Yikes.
To see his movies. Now, two of the films get, now there's interesting things that surrounded Poltergeist. I'll leave it up to you and the listeners.
I've heard this before. Yeah.
Yeah. Two of the cast members were murdered. Dominique Dunn, who played Dana Freeling, the older girl, was strangled by her former boyfriend, a guy by the name of John Sweeney, in the driveway of the West Hollywood home the night before Halloween. And when the police arrived, he surrendered immediately. And he said, "I don't know why I did that. I blacked out and I woke up on top of her. I was strangling her. It was as if I was possessed." All right. And she died 5 days later at the age of 22. Lou Perryman was killed by an axe by a 26-year-old man named Seth Christopher Tatum in Austin, Texas on April 1st, 2009. He was chopped to death. JoBeth Williams, who played the mother, had a supernatural experience during the making of the film. Whenever she came home from filming, the pictures on the walls of her house were crooked, and she became so scared she had to change her mind. She actually mentioned that to Spielberg, who told her, quote, "Don't worry."
Ooh.
All right. And Zelda Rubinstein also had an experience when a vision of her dog came to her and said goodbye. And when she woke up, her mother called and said that her dog had just passed away. Here's the part that really gets me. Shirley MacLaine, the 1980s New Age guru, was wanted by Spielberg to play Diane Freeling, but she turned it down because she said of Spielberg, "You're a horrible man who's terrorizing children."
Wow.
Now, when a New Ager tells you that, you're pretty bad. And here's the other thing is that... Now, don't forget, this had an almost $11 million budget in 1982, which I did on the inflation calculator, which comes out to roughly $32 million today. So we're not talking about a small amount of money. He used actual human skeletons instead of fake ones because they were cheaper. Now, does anyone really buy that? If you do, I got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn here real cheap.
What?
Seriously, you couldn't afford it? And finally, where did this come from? Well, guess who else had visits from his ghost? Here's a direct quote. My enthusiasm, this is Spielberg talking, my enthusiasm for wanting to make Poltergeist would have been difficult for any director I would have hired because it derived from my imagination in part and from my experiences, and it came partly out of my typewriter itself. The typewriter typed from his, and he admitted that he was in contact with a ghost. So that was my introduction to the occult. I think that was...
Wow, boy, there's so much to take in that 55 minutes that we just went through. My mind is kind of blown right now, and I hope that anyone listening, I hope it opens some eyes. I hope people see again. It's hard to just cut everything off. I understand that too. I mean, I like watching movies. I like listening, but I think that at some least people need to think, Holmes, as you said earlier, what are you watching on TV and your movies? What are you listening to? There's a purpose for everything. And most everything in the world does not come from God and does not have a godly purpose. And if it doesn't have a godly purpose, then what purpose does it have? And I think that's a question we should definitely be asking. And I think not enough of us ask it, and we don't ask it about enough things. So I think we should be more vigilant because, again, as everyone knows who's listening to this, our one goal is to get to heaven. And if we're watching garbage or if we're doing anything that has anything remotely to do with the occult, well, I can assuredly say that is not going to help us in our one goal. Enjoyable, do you have any last thoughts or you want to tell us about where we're going with our next episode?
Well, I'll say two things quickly. The next episode, if it's okay, Kevin, I think I'm going to go into, I did a series on Singing for Satan. I'll bring the music industry. And I'll show the blatant connection between, and not the bands that everyone knows are satanic, such as AC/DC and Black Sabbath. The very names, I mean, you know, tell you that they're satanic. But groups that you've been listening to and probably don't even realize, and singers that are indeed bringing occult messages to you. So that's where I'll be going next, if that's okay with you. My one thing I would like to say to the audience is my favorite phrase is learn to discern. It doesn't mean, you know, I don't want people going to extremes. Well, I have to throw everything out. I have to throw the television out of my house. St. Clair of Assisi was proclaimed the patron saint of television by Pope Pius XII. So, because when she couldn't receive communion, God mystically allowed the wall to act as a screen where she could see the holy sacrifice being offered and then had an angel bring her holy communion. And so, you know, because she could see what was going on, Pope Pius XII thought she would make a perfect patroness of television. So now Pope Pius XII isn't going to make something that is intrinsically evil, give it a patron saint. And, SSPX priest made the fatal mistake of telling Father DePauw that the fact that he owned a television set for watching the half hour of nightly news after his prayers was mortally sinful. And he gave him quite the, he said he never would have passed his moral theology course. And he had some other things to say that I won't repeat, but it was not mortally sinful. So I'm not asking people to do things like this or go around burning books, but I am saying this. First, arm yourself with the knowledge which people like you, Kevin, give through your podcasts and what I give through my blog and what I'm giving now, the two of us combining our forces, so to speak. And with this knowledge, you know, the Hosea, the prophet says in his book, my people die for a want of knowledge. And, you know, it's true. When you know what it is you need to avoid, you can then discern, okay, this is godly. And not everything has to be specifically about God right. to be fine. So when you can have this knowledge and when you have this knowledge and you understand it and you can apply it to your life, you can discern for yourself and your family those things which will guide you to heaven and or at the very least are innocuous. And those things which you must avoid. And that's the message that I have here.
Perfect. And Troyebo, thank you again so much. Looking forward to the next show as well. If anyone enjoyed the show, please like, share, subscribe, comment. And really, again, careful with your kids. It's too late to say that now, but share it with your friends who could take something from this, someone maybe perhaps a little too involved in the world, someone who loves Harry Potter too much, because it is serious and it's something that we should take very seriously. If you liked what you heard from Intro Ebo and the other shows that he's done with us, please, again, go check out his blog at introeboadaltaredei2.blogspot.com. I know that's a mouthful. I will attach a link to the blog as well in the show notes, so that you can just click through and check out his stuff where he publishes every Monday. Intro, thank you so much. Looking forward to the next show. Then God bless you.
Thank you.